Allô, c'est Vieux Farka Touré, vous écoutez WVGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Tune in to All Things Cage this Saturday night, 7 p.m., as Laura Kuhn, the executive director of the John Cage Trust, speaks with Russell Hartenberger and Gary Kivistad, longtime members of Nexus, a quartet of master percussionists, internationally known for their percussion instrument playing. And Nexus is also known for several John Cage programs at Bard College over the years, including with members of So Percussion. But tune in for Hartenberger and Kivistad to talk John Cage with Laura Kuhn from the John Cage Trust Saturday night at 7 p.m. on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Natasha Vaughn is reporting for Columbia Greene Media. An overdose spike alert has been issued for Columbia County. Greener Pathways Program Director Carl Quinn said the county had one overdose around 5 p.m. January 20th in the northern part of the county, and a second overdose occurred around 4:30 a.m. early January 21st in the eastern part of the county. Neither of the overdoses was fatal. Ulster County is also experiencing an overdose spike, experiencing four non-fatal overdoses in a 24-hour period, Quinn said. He said it is possible the cases could be connected. The cause of the overdoses is not known. But if they involve the synthetic opioid fentanyl, there could be more overdoses in the area. Quinn said, and I quote, "It would seem that if it was fentanyl, it would be likely that there will be more overdoses," end quote. He added, and I quote, "That's part of the reason we want to get the alert out so quickly, is so that maybe we can prevent some of those from happening if people know that it's out there," end quote. This is the second overdose spike alert in Columbia County in January. So far, there have been 9 overdoses in Columbia and 11 in Greene County. None of the overdoses were fatal. Greener Pathways encourages people who need Narcan or fentanyl test strips to text Narcan Kit to 21000. And a Greener Pathways peer advocate will respond. You can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Mid-Hudson News is reporting Governor Andrew M. Cuomo, January 21st, announced the extension of the open enrollment period for uninsured residents through March 31st. Applications for coverage can be made through New York State of Health, New York's official health plan marketplace, or directly through insurers. The extension will align New York with the federal public health emergency, which was recently extended to April 20th. This extension allows people eligible for qualified health plan insurance additional time to enroll for coverage in 2021 and means that enrollment remains open for all New York State of Health programs. New Yorkers can apply for coverage through New York State of Health online or by calling 1-855-355-5777 and connecting with a free enrollment assister. Tom McFarland is reporting for the New York Law Journal. A group of attorneys is asking a state disciplinary panel to immediately suspend Rudy Giuliani's law license pending an investigation into the former New York City mayor's blocked effort to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election in favor of former President Donald Trump. The complainant is the nonpartisan organization Lawyers Defending American Democracy, made up of former federal prosecutors and retired partners at major law firms. The group has alleged that Giuliani, and I quote, violated multiple provisions of the New York Rules of Professional Conduct, end quote, while representing Trump and the Trump campaign. The complaint did not call for a specific remedy, but said that Giuliani's, and I quote, flagrant and persistent lying, end quote, warranted heightened scrutiny and sanctions because he sought to undermine America's constitutional right to vote. The lawyers cited Giuliani's false statements of massive, widespread voter fraud, as well as his baseless litigation to invalidate millions of votes in key swing states, and also referred to his call on January 6th for, and I quote, trial by combat, end quote, just before mobs violently swarmed the U.S. Capitol building and disrupted the counting of the 2020 Electoral College votes. More than three dozen attorneys signed the complaint. State Senator Brad Holyman, a Manhattan Democrat, last week urged the grievance committee to, and I quote, swiftly launch a thorough investigation into whether Giuliani should be sanctioned for his conduct and strongly consider his disbarment, end quote. The New York Bar Association also announced on January 11th that it would consider removing Giuliani from its membership rolls. And you can read the full story in the New York Law Journal. Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. A state Supreme Court judge January 21st ruled that a lawsuit filed by the National Rifle Association could move forward in New York City. State Attorney General Letitia James last year filed a fraud case against the gun rights organization, arguing it has misused its funds. The NRA denies the charges. The AG's case could lead to the dissolution of the NRA based on state anti-fraud law. The NRA last week announced it would move to Texas and declare bankruptcy while also moving to have the New York case dismissed. But state Supreme Court Judge Joel Cohen disagreed, declining to end the case to have it move to a different venue in Albany. James said, and I quote, "Today's order reaffirms what we've known all along. The NRA does not get to dictate if and where they will answer for their actions," end quote. She went on to say, and I quote, "We thank the court for allowing our case to move forward and look forward to holding the NRA accountable," end quote. Read more about this story at nystateofpolitics.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, January 22nd. This morning's lows range from 27 in Mackey to 31 in Cheviot. As of 7 a.m., highway crews are already reporting snowy conditions on the mountains and to the west. Expect spotty lake effect snow to fall through the day. No major accumulation is expected. It does get breezy this afternoon, and with a high of 38, it is wise to bundle up well if going outside. Overnight, it gets colder than it has been this week. An Arctic front moving through will drop temperatures down to 11 degrees by dawn tomorrow. Some people will need to let the taps drip overnight. Saturday and Sunday will have the potential for more lake effect snow. It will be spotty with highs in the 20s. Today's tide schedule is low at 4:06 a.m., high at 10:02 a.m., low again at 5 p.m., high again at 10:27 p.m. Sunset today will be at 4:41 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:13 a.m. Looking way up, we see a mid-latitude coronal hole is releasing a solar wind due to arrive on Monday. Solar wind speed is currently 305 kilometers per second at 12.2 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1 quiet. The current sunspot number is 26. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Shimidis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is WA3QIZ. Do you read me?
Seymour, isn't it about time you made a real friend?
Mother, please, I'm communicating with my fellow hams.
How do I talk? Push this button here. You're all losers!
East End was once a happy town, where harmony and love was busting out at all the seams and in the trees above. The doves of peace were laying eggs. There were no signs of strife, for each man loved his neighbor and sometimes his neighbor's wife. But a sudden change soon come about. Storm clouds were in the sky. Nobody stopped to kiss a body coming through the rye. For each man eyed his neighbor with malice and with hate. Housewives no longer spilled the beans across the garden gate. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. It was sewer pipes versus slop pails. The town was split in two. With profane propaganda, the air was often blue. The sewer and water faction ran a sanitary plank. They said shallow wells and slop pails and toilets always stank. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. But those slop pailers were stubborn. They fought with tooth and nail. They said our nitwit council should be languishing in jail. They told how high taxation and plumbers' union fees would throw us in the poorhouse and they'd throw away the keys. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. But when the vote was counted, the slop pailers met defeat. And then they started tearing up our quiet village street. Now peace and harmony once more replaced the grapes of wrath. So when next you visit East End, just stop in and have a bath. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do.
On the air, the new stark reality that you are within the paradigm of Joe Biden, Kamala Harris. 4 years. Four more years. Lock him up. Lock him up, man. to agree. I have to inform you now. I won't mess up. I'm sorry. Sorry, I just wanted to tell you ahead of time. I won't miss it at all. A lot of people will. A lot of people are very sad tonight. Sad for what they have, for also for what they don't have. Some people are just sad for existing in this beautiful butterfly world, where everyone can do whatever it is they want, no matter the color of their pupils. We're hitting on a new nail. Put a new nail through our heads. We're gonna come back better than ever. Better than ever. I know that a lot isn't going to change. But maybe there's all that does change. We don't know. Let's just see how bad it goes. Get back to me in 2 years. Tell me how it happens.
Happy New Beginning Wednesday. I really haven't figured out the term that I want to call this Wednesday, but I'm happy and it's Wednesday. Got a great panel for you today.
Wednesday.
Yeah, but I don't know, man.
It's not enough.
4 years ago it was inaugural too.
Oh, okay. I get it.
You know what I mean? So I was thinking about maybe something different. You know what I mean? So, gentlemen, how important or how special was it to see, you know, our first, you know, woman of color and other descent become vice president of our United States? How important was that for you today, Jay?
I think it's very important because it breaks the glass ceiling that's never been broken before. We've only seen one African-American person or a person of color in general with such high power. So it's great to see that they're expanding it so more people can have that dream of doing it. You can't really have the dream until you see the opportunity, and now that there's that opportunity there for everyone.
And Mac?
Yeah, for me, man, it was it really hit home when I'm sitting there with my daughter. And just seeing like the smile on her face, right, as this was all taking place, and it was just this constant grin of smile, and really for me, man, I haven't had a chance to really process the moment with her yet, but I can't wait to hear what she was thinking and how she feels, and that was really what was driving my emotion in the moment, as well as it just being a historic. But how it directly reflects on my daughter is just you know, is priceless to me.
Dia?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I zoned out just. Oh God! Can you just repeat your question? I'm sorry.
Oh, India, you know, look, you know, made it bad for all the black women, man.
I know you just
black women don't listen.
I'm trying to do two things at once. I'm sorry.
I can let you bounce if you gotta go.
No, you're fine.
All right, so, but yeah, I was asking you, how important was it to see her be able to accept, you know, the vice presidency? How important was that to you or to people around you?
It was extremely important to me. It kind of made me feel like when I think about Reverend Blanks, how she felt when Obama became the first black president, and like I just remember the look on her face and how happy she was. And I'm like, now I get that. I mean, I was happy when Obama became president, but it's a different type of happiness now because she is a woman and a black woman at that.
I agree. For me, man, you know, I watched it at work and it was just a moment, man. I remember when Obama became president and it was a moment for me, but this was a moment also because I just felt like I don't know. Sometimes I just feel like it's, you know, black and white and men and women. I was just happy for the culture. You know what I mean? I was really happy for the culture. And I really believe that she has the ability to do some really great things there and maybe undo some of the things that were done.
For those of you who didn't know, we had a huge day. We had a huge month, I think, of events. Shocking, good, hopeful, mad, whatever. It's all been mixed into 2021, which is good, I think. I think having the balance of all the things are necessary. We had the memorial of Dr. Martin Luther King, which was huge. And we also had the inaugural speech by a young woman who I admire very much so, Amanda Gorman. I understand it's been played already once today, but for those of you who had to work or couldn't listen in, now you're going to tune in and we're going to play that clip for you.
Oh, hello. Is this Chuck?
Yeah. The only youngest person that was ever a president that act young was Trump. He couldn't keep that. He would never even sleep. I'm telling you. Like, they picked the wrong person. I'm telling you. That crooked bastard. I'm telling you.
You think he's more crooked than the man who's leveraged with more than $400 million in private debt that is secured to his own name?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes. They got to get rid of him. They got to get rid of him quick, because you don't know what's going to happen after this. I can tell you what's going to happen after this, but I ain't going to talk about it, because I'll probably get...
I think we got another caller, too.
Hi, it's Gig Talk. How can we help?
You probably can't. This is Tom. I called a week or two ago and told you about seeing Manfred Mann up at the RPI Fieldhouse in Troy.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Are you talking about what happened at the Capitol and the new president and the new vice president?
Like what, that there was an inauguration yesterday?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby sounds like your feet feel like you're like not on hot coals that are also on broken glass that are also in an alligator pond while you're getting a rainstorm of poop also hailed on you like it was maybe 7 days ago.
True enough.
I was trying to follow that. I was diagramming that whole thing. We'll be right back.
restless eyes close, maybe it'll go away. Please rest tomorrow, bring a satisfied day. The restless urge and love that's worth the burning for. Surely it's that one comforting love to give you more.
Quite a budget crunch from President Trump. How bad is it, Secretary Van Houten?
We're broke.
The country is broke? How can that be? What about my pledge to build the world's largest bookmobile? Isn't there any money left for that?
No, and we borrowed from every country in the world.
Everything is so divisive these days. Between the pandemic and politics, and all of that being amplified by social media, it feels like we're constantly being forced to choose a side. Sometimes that choice is easy, agreeing that racism is stupid, for example. Other times it's a bit nuanced, like Elon Musk is obviously just a real-life Hank Scorpio from The Simpsons, but I still want a Tesla. And if there's one thing that our scroll culture does not do very well, it's nuance. Don't get me wrong, nuance can be and is still understood. You just can't be nuanced about it, which can make picking a side on any issue these days a little tricky. But don't worry. Here's how to tell if you're on the right side of any issue. If your opinion is shared by, say, scientists, doctors, people who have dedicated their lives to public service, and people smarter than you, and generally good people all around the world, you're probably on the correct side of the issue. If, for example, your opinion is shared by racists, Nazis, people who change their views based on their own personal gain, regardless of the impact on others, people who've never paused to ask themselves, wait, does that make sense? The spectacularly dim, despots, cult leaders, or generally bad people, it doesn't mean you're also one of those people, but it's not looking good, and it may be time for a rethink. Take a look at who shares your views, a really close look. Actually, even a passing glance. Because as the old saying goes, you are the company you keep. I hope that helps.
With the Union till every battle's won.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Oh, workers, can you stand it? Oh, tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man?
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Don't scab for the bosses. Don't listen to their lies. Us poor folks haven't got a chance unless we organize.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Yesterday's inauguration was a rough day for members of QAnon, which is a bizarre collection of online conspiracy theories from a complicated plot connecting UFOs and the Illuminati to the claim that certain celebrities, entrepreneurs, and politicians are lizard people disguised in human skin. Of course, some of the lizard man skin suits are less convincing than others. You may know of QAnon thanks to their extensive product placement at the Capitol Hill riot.
Q! Quack, 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 quack.
Quack, quack, quack.
Quack, 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 quack.
Quack, 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 quack.
Quack, quack, quack.
Quack, 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 quack.
Quack, 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 quack.
Q.
Quack, 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 quack,
quack. QAnon crazies take their marching orders from a shadowy online anonymous figure named Q. No one knows his or her or its real name. Now, Q has posted thousands of cryptic messages since 2017, claiming, among other things, that the 45th president was secretly spearheading a spiritual war against an elite cabal of child-eating Satanists who controlled Washington, Hollywood, and the world, and would soon corral his enemies for military tribunals and mass executions in a show of force they called the Storm. For 4 years, Q kept saying, today's the day, and then nothing happened that day. Meanwhile, the online promoters of Q's failed prophecies were raking in cash by selling QAnon merchandise. I can't believe they're making them pay for merch. The best cults give you free Kool-Aid and Nikes. The election presented a bit of a problem for Q. If the all-powerful guy who was supposed to do the powerful thing wasn't in power anymore, how was he supposed to do the thing? So yesterday, QAnon followers watched the inauguration like Linus in a pumpkin patch.
Stupid! What do you mean, stupid? Just wait till next year, Charlie Brown. You'll see. Next year at this same time, I'll find a pumpkin patch that is real sincere. And I'll sit in that pumpkin patch until the great pumpkin appears.
And the conspiracy peddlers kept leading them on, promising things like the Bidens, Obamas, and Clintons would be rounded up and executed for child sex trafficking, treason, and other crimes, and that the former president would remain in power. Okay, it sounds deranged, but there are a lot of weird internet theories about that guy. For instance, is he part Sasquatch? Now, by the time Biden was sworn in, it became apparent that the storm wasn't coming. And QAnon followers started posting things like, I can't stop crying. I feel sick, disgusted, and disappointed. And it's over. It is sadly, sadly over. It was a short walk from Q to why? One follower was in disbelief, posting, it simply doesn't make sense that we all got played. Yes, it does. You listen to some rando on the internet. But if you would like to get revenge on that rando, all you have to do is send some money to a Nigerian prince I know. Or just send it to me. I'll make sure he gets it. But then again, not everything can make as much sense as JFK Jr. faking his own death in order to one day reemerge to join the Republican ticket and stop Bill Gates from microchipping our vaccines. Come on, QAnon followers. It's not too late to join the rest of us in the rational world and wait for Jesus to come back on a cloud of glory to judge the living and the dead. Now, after the inaugural, Q followers got a dose of reality from one Q Forum administrator who posted, we have a new president sworn in, and it is our responsibility as citizens to respect the Constitution, adding, please remember all the friends and happy memories we made together over the past few years. Turns out the real conspiracy theory was the cannibal lizard friends we made along the way.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Next, I am joined by author and scholar Barbara Smith. She has been active in movements for social, racial, and economic justice since the 1960s. Her new piece in the Boston Globe is called White People Now Realize White Supremacy is Coming for Them. Barbara Smith, thanks for joining us again on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you.
And just to get started, I just wanted to hear your reaction to the events on January 6th attack on the Capitol.
Besides the shock, but not surprise, because people have been using that phrase a lot during this terrible administration, shocked, but not surprised, because, of course, this individual is capable of anything, as low as you think it's possible to go. I was struck by the fact that people were saying that this kind of mob violence, this kind of un-American, seditious behavior was just completely out of character for the United States. And I'm thinking, the first thing I think of is like, have you ever heard of lynch mobs? Because everything that was being said about the attack on the Capitol could be said about the more than 4,000 lynchings that occurred in the United States starting in the post-Civil War period and going well into the mid-20th century. So that was one of my thoughts, that I think that as a Black person, an African-American, I think I see what happened quite differently, because I know that kind of terrorism has been visited on my community from time out of mind.
Since George Floyd was murdered, you have written a series of 4 articles on white supremacy. If you look at this series as a whole, what should our audience know about racism and the system of white supremacy?
One of the things that I'd like to point out is that at the end of the first article, I talk about how it was likely that even though there was so much focus on what was going on racially after George Floyd was lynched, and also with Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, etc. There was a lot of more focus because of those egregious murders. That even so, that what would eventually happen is that the establishment would just do the band-aids, performative, not really change anything. But I also warned, this was the last sentence of that article written in June, was that if the nation did not address white supremacy, that it would face continued police brutality, vigilante violence, and would move in the direction and be closer to becoming a failed state. And that's exactly where we are now. That analysis that I included in that first piece, it came to pass. And that was one of the motivations I had for writing the one that was just published. I knew that without addressing and eradicating white supremacy, we were on a very dark path to being a failed state, because there were definitely signs and indications of that. When you had the video of a man being murdered on screen, that the whole world gets to observe and see, you're a failed state. That's the kind of thing that's supposed to happen in those other countries, right? The terrorism, etc. And there it is. It's America. Well, my primary goal when I wrote the first one, which is titled The Problem is White Supremacy, is to get people to begin to think about the fact that this is a system. It is a system of oppression. It is coordinated. It is embedded. It is based in a power structure. It is violent. It is vicious. And it has at least one purpose, more than one. But one of its major purposes is to make sure that white people are advantaged and that people of color are not. And that works out economically. So it's not just not liking people of color, specifically black people, but of course all people of color, because we all pay that price for living in a white supremacist nation. It's not just about not liking us or feeling superior to us. It's because they're economic gains. And that's what I wanted people to understand. And that particularly in relationship to the very, very intense conversation about racism and policing, because I think there are people to this day, in fact, I know there are people to this day, because I see them on my TV, who are saying that if we just get the police to do better and not to be so incredibly violent in how they treat people of color who live in the United States, if we can just get them to do better, then everything's solved. Now, with the attack on the Capitol, the conversation has shifted to if we can just get these white supremacist organized groups under control, then everything will be solved. But it's always the wrong answer. That's neither one of those things, getting the police to reform, or on the other hand, getting the white gangs, the white racist gangs to reform. We're still going to have white supremacy as a system.
Thank you for that. And you title the piece, or the piece is titled, and you talk about, you write, white people realize white supremacy is coming for them. Can you explain this sentence?
I like that sentence because it says very succinctly that now that white people realize that white supremacy can be dangerous even to them, they are paying more attention to it and they're actually talking about it, but they're not talking about it as a system. They're talking about it as fringe hate groups that are armed. That's how they're seeing it now. And I guess it's baby steps, but I've always known that white supremacy was not good for white people either. But now it's just very crystal clear because they were gunning for white people. Their worldview meant that certain white people were traitorous to them. But of course, there was also the other myth that a certain individual had won the election. What a coincidence that the people who believed that that certain individual had won the election were wearing pro-Holocaust T-shirts and are carrying Confederate flags. What a coincidence.
Do you want to go into that a little bit more?
The point I'm making is that there's a lot of focus nowadays on this lie, the big lie that the individual got people to believe, and that he incited them with the big lie, because he was telling that lie for months on end, even before the election, that if he did not win, that would show that the election was stolen and that it was rigged. So people are focusing on that, but they're not focusing on why are certain people disposed to believing that lie. I made the point in the new op-ed that the, you know, that white supremacy is a driver for the success of that person's presidency. So it's no coincidence then that the people who ran into the Capitol and were responsible for the deaths of five other human beings, it's no surprise that they have those kind of views. And I also make the point that that is a very fundamental base of 45's deep appeal. He was promising to those 74 million people who voted for him, more people voted for him this time than they did in 2016. What does that tell you? He is providing something to them. He is offering something to them that they dearly, dearly lust after. And what that is unbridled, free reign, white supremacy. They are concerned, and that's a nice word, they're incensed that soon they will no longer be the majority population by numbers in the United States. Doesn't mean that they're not going to have white skin privilege and that white supremacy isn't going to continue long after those numerical proportions changed. But they also had to deal with the great insult of a Black president, and they have to deal with the insult of people of color being assertive about our rights, as was so very vividly shown by the massive demonstrations that happened after George Floyd's lynching. So they're just aggrieved. They're aggrieved. They want this to be a white man's country, and that's what he was selling them. That's what he was offering to them. I think also it's important to know about white supremacy and white racism that looking at the 74 million people who voted for the former president, that I'm not saying that all 74 million people are card-carrying white supremacists, those who voted for him, but I am saying that they're all right with white supremacy because he is a white supremacist. They are all right with where he's coming from, the babies in the cages and being separated from the parents and the SHIT whole countries, all of the things that he has put out there. He has like an encyclopedia of like these racist attacks. And the 74 million people who voted for him and the 87% of Republicans today, according to recent polling, who have no problems with what he has done and do not hold him accountable for that attack on the Capitol, that shows that we have a big problem.
Now, Barbara, as we look toward the Biden administration, obviously, white supremacy won't magically get erased, but what do you hope for as we see a new president enter the White House?
All we can do is continue to speak truth and to organize. In the previous op-ed that you and I actually did talk about back in November, when I had written a speech for President-elect Biden, that's exactly what I was trying to get at. This is what you could do. And that speech that I wrote for him was kind of the next segue coming out of the Hamer-Baker plan that I'd written about late summer to do something on the scale of a Marshall Plan to eradicate white supremacy. I don't see anyone except for me talking about eradicating white supremacy, at least not publicly. And it's not that I'm so naive as to think that just by saying it could happen, but I want people to think about, like, would that be a good thing? Is there a way to possibly work on that? Could that be achieved? Not just to kind of do the cosmetic stuff around the edges. Those administration appointments don't address that. The only way you address it is to explicitly name it and then to try to do something about it.
And Barbara Smith, as we wrap up here today, I would like to give you the final word.
I believe in movements. I believe in organizing. I believe in grassroots people speaking up and figuring out how, working together, how we can achieve the goals that we think are important. This may seem like a not on the topic, but I was reading articles this morning about the situation of people in prison who are not receiving, in most cases, the vaccine. Our mass incarceration prison industrial complex is disproportionately people of color, and they cannot have access to this solution. That's the kind of thing that we focus on as organizers. We're not so interested in the cosmetics. I think that with the vice president elect, that's happening quite a bit. People are congratulating themselves. And then when you ask them, and when was the last time you spoke out and tried to do something about the great racial and economic disparities in your community, it would be crickets because they wouldn't have anything to say.
Well, Barbara Smith, thank you so much for adding your voice and your ideas.
Thank you, EP.
Each person shall have a right to clean air and water and a healthful environment. That's the language of a recently passed State Senate Bill S-528 to amend the New York State Constitution. It's also known as the Environmental Bill of Rights. To talk about what this amendment means, I'm joined by the lead sponsor, State Senator Robert Jackson. Welcome to HMM, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you for having me in.
So please tell our listeners what this amendment does. Well, it's not an amendment yet, obviously. It's still in the legal process, but what does it do?
This bill, and this is the second year of the bill, would amend the New York State Constitution that basically says that everyone in New York State is entitled to clean water and clean air and a healthful, healthy environment. That's what it says. And so I think that that is like so elementary, so, you know, basic that we have clean water and fresh air to breathe. And in fact, you know, the mayor of Flint, Michigan, where the water was all polluted and people were drinking it and children died, 9 people were arrested even after the fact because of neglect of his duty and responsibility as the mayor for that particular city. And you know one thing? That is shameful, in my opinion, that they allow that to happen. It's shameful that children have died as a result of that. So basically, this constitutional amendment will guarantee that. And I was asked by my colleague who had questions on the bill that it didn't have any more details of how that was going to happen. And I said, well, it guarantees that. And if someone has a legal right to challenge that, they can. I gave the example of the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, which is an education lawsuit in which, as the lead plaintiff in that, we sued the state of New York because the Constitution basically says that every child is entitled to a basic education. And that was not defined in the New York State Constitution. And 13 years of litigation, we went to the highest court in the state of New York on 3 different occasions where we and the court defined what a basic education is. And so it said, and I'm going to make the connection to the water and air. It said that the highest court said that every child shall graduate from high school knowing how to read, knowing how to write, knowing how to serve on a jury and being able to hold competitive employment. They defined that as a result of litigation. Prior to that, there was no definition of an adequate education. We advocates called it a sound basic education. The court said it's an adequate education and everyone is entitled to that. So if in fact there's litigation of the fact that people don't have clean water and clean air, then the courts will have to define what is clean water and clean air? And now, obviously, the environmentalists and the organizations will be there fighting with us in order to make sure we protect every person's right to have clean air and clean water.
So how do you protect the definition of what clean air and clean water is?
I think that the environmentalists and everyone can define what that means and then look at what's happening around the country. And if there's, let's assume there's nothing around the country, for example, then we will define it. Clean water means clean water that people can drink and not being polluted with chemicals that's going to get them sick or poisoned, and air that people can breathe in without having toxics in the air. And so if necessary to define that, we, the advocates and people will define that. And if there's a legal challenge, then the courts will define what clean air and clean water is, just like they defined in the campaign for fiscal equity versus the state of New York, what a adequate education is, the same way.
Why did you want to pass this bill, Mr. Jackson?
It's not me. I was just the point person for it. It's the advocates. They're pushing for a just environment so that people can breathe and run and not have to choke up with polluting air. And I gave one example with someone. I remember when I was down in Florida and I was drinking water in Florida. Oh my gosh, it's so rusty. And that if you continuously let it to go into the sink or what have you, it'll have your sink and toilet all brown. That's not the type of water that I want to drink, even though some people are drinking that water. I live in New York City. You live in Troy or surrounding areas up there. I think, in my opinion, that New York City has some of the best drinking water around. But you know one thing? New York City pays a lot of money, and Ulster County and other parts of upstate New York to make sure we have that clean water. It should be a right for everyone, no matter where you live, to have clean, fresh drinking water.
How does passing this amendment, this bill to become an amendment, provide more protections for New Yorkers than current environmental laws, such as the State Environmental Quality Review Act?
Well, what was said before, it was not defined that everyone has that right as a person that lives in New York State. Now it defines that everyone is entitled to that. And so here's a hypothetical example. If I have an industry and that I've been dumping water into, dumping chemicals and stuff into the rivers, okay, then people have a right to say, hey, what are you doing, industry? You can't do that. People are drinking this water. Just like my daughter came and gave me a glass of fresh drinking water from New York City. And if, in fact, in that hypothetical example, that the factory doesn't stop, then people have a right to sue to make sure that they have clean drinking water. So, and I'll drink some clean New York water right now.
If this bill becomes an amendment, will it affect sovereign groups in New York, such as the Seneca Nation?
I don't know if we're governed, have jurisdiction over them. I'm sorry, I'm not an attorney. I don't know. But I would hope that everyone, no matter who you are, whether you're a sovereign nation or not inside New York State, would want clean, fresh water and clean air for everyone to breathe. So I would hope that it does. And if it doesn't, and if, let's assume, I give another example. If it doesn't, and we can...
We'll be right back. This is Darian Sahanaja of the band known as Wonderments, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
Find out where the music takes Lose on the next Deep Threes as the jazz ensemble brings together electric guitar, cello, and spoken word. Plus tracks from Ornette Coleman, Kronos Quartet, Portapak, and Avid Duo. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of E-Team of Sunnyside, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for January the 22nd, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. President Joe Biden made the Keystone XL pipeline one of his top priorities on his first day in office, issuing an executive order to revoke the controversial project's permit. We get more from Eric Tegenoff.
The pipeline aimed to deliver 800,000 gallons per day of Alberta tar sands through Montana on its way to Louisiana and Texas. Bill Whitehead is chairman of the Assiniboine and Sioux Rural Water Supply System in northeastern Montana. He says it's been a long-fought battle with many ups and downs.
It was looking tough at different times. It looks like we may prevail, but never let your guard down. Canada still wants you to fight it out, you know, as well as other corporate entities.
Whitehead says he was concerned about the pipeline leaking because the local water system was not designed to process tar sands. TC Energy, the company behind Keystone XL, says Biden's decision will result in the loss of thousands of jobs.
The Dakota Access Pipeline began operating in 2017. On his first day in office, Biden also rejoined the Paris Climate Agreement. NBC News is reporting that Dr. Anthony Fauci now feels free to speak honestly about COVID-19 now that former President Donald Trump is out of office. In his first news briefing since President Joe Biden was sworn in, Fauci said the new administration was committed to being completely transparent, open, and honest. NBC News notes that's a sharp break from the Trump White House when Fauci said he often felt there would be repercussions for speaking honestly about the pandemic. They quote Fauci as saying it was clear there were things said regarding things like hydroxychloroquine and other things like that that really wasn't comfortable because they were not in scientific fact. And some community health advocates say that COVID-19 vaccine is as big a problem as distrust of the process in Black communities.
Black Americans are receiving COVID vaccinations at dramatically lower rates than whites, according to Kaiser Health News. And Florida's vaccine tracking website shows 58,540 black people have received at least one dose compared to almost 749,000 whites. Mistrust rooted in structural racism is one cause of the low inoculation rates. But another is access, says Deborah Austin. She's with Reach Up, a group that's launched vigorous education campaigns and vaccine drives.
And so that's very disconcerting to us because we've educated people. We've been able to dispel the mistrust and the discomfort, and now they just can't get the vaccine.
I'm Tramell Gomes.
As of Thursday, Florida had distributed 2.5 million doses of vaccines and administered about 1.3 million of them. This is PNS. As an estimated 213,000 families in Pennsylvania face possible eviction, civil rights advocates say President Biden's executive order extending the moratorium on evictions is a good start. But Congress could do more to protect tenants who fall behind on rent because of the pandemic.
The moratorium was set to expire at the end of this month on evictions from federally assisted or financed properties and on foreclosures on federally guaranteed mortgages, but the executive order extends it through the end of March. Ian Thompson with the ACLU says it needs to be expanded to cover all tenants and for the duration of the pandemic.
We also need requirements put in place on landlords to make sure that they are not violating these important protections.
He adds that Congress needs to have emergency rental assistance in place before the moratorium is lifted. Some landlords have already challenged the constitutionality of the federal moratorium in court. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Meantime, the nation is at a turning point with a new push for unity. Some groups say changing our food system is one crucial step in addressing the divide.
Executive Director of the Heal Food Alliance, Naveen Aghana, says the combination of COVID-19, the climate crisis, and political unrest has illuminated the food system's vulnerability in times of crisis. And she explains that disinvestment from majority black neighborhoods, lack of access to land, and weak labor laws have fueled inequities.
For many of our communities who are most negatively impacted by the food system, that's been the case for hundreds of years. Black, Indigenous, and other people of color have come under attack and have been the ones who are most exploited within our food system over time.
Connick contends these divides cannot be bridged without first dismantling policies that put profits over people and the environment. Mary Sherman reporting.
Finally, Diane Bernard tells us remote learning during the pandemic has meant excessive screen time for kids, and a Maryland healthcare group is raising awareness to prevent too much exposure to potentially damaging blue light.
The light emitted from digital devices can cause serious retinal damage in children with long-term exposure, according to Scott Edmonds with United Healthcare. Children's eyes are still developing, and more blue light enters their retinas than adults' eyes. In addition to taking breaks, Edmonds suggests teaching kids to follow what he calls the 20/20 rule to protect their eyes.
Every 20 minutes, you should look off into the distance at something 20 feet or further for 20 seconds. Nothing's the chance of you're going to get myopia, get you away from the blue light.
About 64% of teachers think blue light protection would improve students' attention spans. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on some of the nation's most interesting radio stations and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Melanie Lekachevic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. A petition signed by 254 Coeymans residents asking the Clean Air Law amendments be put to a public vote has been rejected. The petition, submitted on December 22nd, asked that a permissive referendum be held, giving voters the chance to have a say on the amendments to the law that were adopted unanimously by the town in November. The Clean Air Law, adopted in 2019 under the previous administration, limited the amount of waste that can be burned in the town to 25 tons per day. It tasked the town code enforcement office with monitoring air emissions. Current town officials argue the town did not have the equipment or the expertise to monitor air emissions. There were also concerns that a legal challenge in Maryland to a similar law in Baltimore could lead to costly court challenges to the Coeymans law. The LaFarge cement plant, which has a permit to burn tires to generate tire-derived fuel, promised to take legal action to pursue all options to protect its permit. Christine Primamo, an opponent of the amendment, said, and I quote, "People do not want dangerous toxins from the incineration of solid waste of any kind, tires, tire-derived fuel, AFFF, or anything other than coal or other fossil fuels burned in cement kilns as an alternative to increase profits for multinational businesses and others who will benefit from this substitution." The petition drew broad support across the political spectrum, with 51% of those who signed it registered Republicans, conservatives, independents, or voters unaffiliated with a political party, Primamo said. The petition was rejected by town clerk Cindy Rosie after she determined it to be invalid. Rosie said, and I quote, "As the decision of whether or not a petition is valid rests solely on the town clerk, our town attorney, James Peluso, and I discussed the petition at length and consulted town law in order to determine the validity of it." She said it was found to be invalid because the local law to amend the Clean Air Law was not subject to permissive referendum. The town board will not consider the petition. Town Supervisor George McHugh confirmed, "The town board will not consider the petition." Promono said, and I quote, "We want to let the board know that the residents of Coeymans would like the opportunity to vote on these amendments. The board has the power to submit this question to the voters, but it has decided not to do it," end quote. Read the full story in the Ravenna News Herald. Noah Zweifel is reporting for the Altamont Enterprise. The Burn Town Board January 14th reappointed Chance Townsend as the town code enforcement officer for one more year. The appointment was approved 3-1 on a motion by Deputy Supervisor Dennis Palo. The position remained unfilled after the January 6th reorganizational meeting because the motion to put forward at that time lacked the votes needed to approve the appointment. Late last year, it was reported that Townsend was uncertified because he failed to complete any of the required annual in-service training for nearly 2 years. The board did not acknowledge its error in appointing Townsend illegally, but announced in December that it would advertise to fill the position along with that of the town's dog catcher based on resident feedback. Ultimately, both of the 2020 appointments were reappointed. Townsend's certification was reinstated on December 17th, according to the Department of State. Two other candidates for the code enforcement position included Timothy Lippert, a Burn resident who formerly served as the town's building inspector, and Kevin Flinstead of Westerlo, who serves as chief of the Westerlo Volunteer Fire Company. Prior to his January 1st, 2020 appointment, Townsend served as code enforcement officer for 13 months before he resigned in early 2019 due to frustrations with the board's then Democratic majority. Under the current GOP majority board, Townsend will receive a 24% raise this year. Read the full story in the Altamont Enterprise. Porcupine Soup is reporting the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation now has applications available for its Cooperative Day-Old Pheasant Chick program. The program allows people to participate in raising and releasing pheasants in advance of the fall hunt. The program is provided through DEC's partnership with Hunters, 4-H youth, and interested landowners. DEC Commissioner Basil Sagel said in a statement, and I quote, "The Day-Old Pheasant Chick program is a great way to learn about animal husbandry and wildlife management," end quote. The program began in the early 1900s. At that time, the State Conservation Department distributed pheasant eggs and chicks to farmers and rural youth, a tradition that continues to this day. In 2020, DEC distributed more than 31,500 day-old pheasant chicks at no cost to qualified applicants able to provide a brooding facility, covered outdoor rearing pens, and an adequate release site. Chicks obtained through the DEC program cannot be released on private shooting preserves, and all release sites must be approved in advance by the department. Applications must be filed with the DEC Regional Wildlife Manager by March 25th. For more information, call 607-273-2769. And you can read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, January 22nd. This morning's lows range from 27 in Mackey to 31 in Cheviot. As of 7 a.m., highway crews are already reporting snowy conditions on the mountains and to the west. Expect spotty lake effect snow to fall through the day. No major accumulation is expected. It does get breezy this afternoon, and with a high of 38, it is wise to bundle up well if going outside. Overnight, it gets colder than it has been this week. An Arctic front moving through will drop temperatures down to 11 degrees by dawn tomorrow. Some people will need to let the taps drip overnight. Saturday and Sunday will have the potential for more lake effect snow. It will be spotty with highs in the 20s. Today's tide schedule is low at 4:06 a.m., high at 10:02 a.m., low again at 5 p.m., high again at 10:27 p.m. Sunset today will be at 4:41 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:13 a.m. Looking way up, we see a mid-latitude coronal hole is releasing a solar wind due to arrive on Monday. Solar wind speed is currently 305 kilometers per second at 12.2 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1 quiet. The current sunspot number is 26. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. What do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. Well, you're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money. And then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
Magic. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Steve Siena came out with some interesting numbers from the polling that you do. Can you tell us about them?
As Siena has done virtually every year for well over a decade now, came out with a poll asking New Yorkers their views on race, race relations, discriminations. It's our way of acknowledging and celebrating Martin Luther King Day. And what we find right now is that 31% of New Yorkers would describe race relations in this state as excellent or good, compared to 64% who describe them as only fair or poor. What to me, though, Corinne, is really surprising is not those numbers, because in fact, that's the exact same number we had when Siena last asked this question in June, and it's very comparable to what the number was this time last year on MLK Day in 2020, when it was 33 positive, 64 negative. To me, what's particularly surprising is that over the course of the last year, when there's been these national conversations about race and the criminal justice system and policing, and we have Black Lives Matter, and we've had protests in big cities and small cities and little towns all across the country this year. And the fact that the views of New Yorkers when it comes to race have not changed an iota in the last 6 months or in the last year.
How do you explain that?
I don't. I really don't. Two other interesting things, though. One is when we look at that number, we should understand that while there's a little bit of difference by race, there really isn't a significant difference by race. So for Black voters in New York, they are 27% positive towards race relations in the state, 71 negative. For white voters, it's 33-62. A little better, but not significantly. And again, we've seen that throughout. What's really other thing that to me is particularly interesting is that for the last 6 years, since 2015, these numbers on this question have been virtually the same. They go up a couple points one year, down a couple points another year. But the real difference was if we go back to MLK Day 2014, 7 years ago, at that time it was 47% positive, 51% negative. Still underwater, but significantly closer. A year later, on MLK Day 2015, it was almost identical to where it is today, 31-66. What happened between MLK Day 2014 and 2015? Eric Garner in Staten Island, Michael Brown in Ferguson. I think those two issues and the national conversation that occurred during the course of that year moved voters, Blacks and whites, so that we saw that change by 2015. Nothing that has happened over the last 6 years has moved these numbers significantly better or significantly worse. The other question that we haven't asked quite as long, but we've asked it now several times over the course of the last 5 or 6 years is, do you think minorities in New York, African Americans, Latinos, Asians, others, do you think that they experience discrimination here in New York State? 70% of New Yorkers say yes, 70-22. Back in June, it was 73-19. But every time we've asked this question, it has been between 2/3 and 3/4 of New Yorkers. There is a racial difference, but not huge. 90% of African American, 78% of Latino, and 65% of white voters say that racial minorities experience discrimination in New York. And similarly, 69% say that religious minorities, Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, others, face discrimination, 69-22 on that question. It's not getting better, it's not getting worse, but despite all the conversation, despite all the protests and march and discussions, very little has changed in the mind of New Yorkers, Black or white, about the state of race relations or discrimination in this state.
Why is polling on this question important? What can these numbers tell us about ourselves, about what we need to do?
Poll is nothing more than a snapshot in time, but this is a snapshot we've taken now, at least annually, for more than a decade. And I think it's important that people understand how they, their community, their neighbors, their fellow New Yorkers feel about issues, particularly issues like this that mean so much to people. I mean, another question we've asked now for several years, have you personally been treated unfairly in the last year because of your race, your religion, your ethnicity, your gender, your orientation, your disability status, what have you? And almost a third, 32% of New Yorkers say yes, they have. A third of New Yorkers, almost. And we've seen that number consistently for the last several years. So when you have an issue where one out of every three fellow New Yorkers feels that they are treated unfairly because of who they are, what they are, what they feel, what they believe or don't believe, I think that's worth talking about. And it seems to me a day like Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday is a kind of nice day to talk about issues like this.
Yeah, if nothing else, it tells us how much work we still have yet to do, not only just about people's perceptions of the problem, but the problems that they're experiencing themselves.
Absolutely. And I should just quickly mention that we included in our favorable, unfavorable section when we ask about people and institutions, we included the Black Lives Matter movement and asked voters, do they have a favorable or unfavorable view of the BLM movement? 56% of New Yorkers view it favorably, 33% view it unfavorably. And again, we do see a racial difference, but the racial difference pales in comparison to the partisan difference. So on a question like this, 77% of New Yorkers have a favorable view of the Black Lives Matter movement. Independents, sort of divided, but by a small plurality, 44% to 40%, they have a favorable view of BLM. But Republicans, by a 62% to 27% margin, they have an unfavorable view of Black Lives Matter movement. And then we asked voters, do you think that the Black Lives Matter movement has had a positive impact, a negative impact, or no impact on America over the course of the last year? 48% of New Yorkers, a plurality, think BLM has had a positive impact on America.